Welcome you guys to this Opal session. As you know, Alliance is taking a leadership role in terms of innovation, and this is just another example of the kind of innovative programs that libraries can and should get involved with if we're really going to reach out into the community. I've been doing some reading on innovation lately, and I'm really convinced that innovation truly is the key to growth, and that innovation truly requires risk. And I think if you take those two concepts into the Opal program that you're going to be part of today, I think you'll have a really good sense of where libraries actually can go. So I know you're in great hands, and have a great program.
Thank you so much. And again, you know, I just can't say enough about everything that Alliance has done for this whole system, and how Tom and Lori and all the work that they've done. So it's terrific. So let me welcome everybody today to Communications Between Techies and Non-Techies. It's our first in a series of community continuing education programs for librarians, and one of the reasons we wanted to do this was so that librarians could get a feel for Opal, not just for themselves and for their own use, but also so that we can start looking at how we can provide more public programs through Opal. And I want to thank David for being the kickoff for the whole series. As you probably all know, David King is very well published. He presents all over the place. He's at Computers and Libraries, an interlibrarian, I think every year, and he has a fantastic blog that he has already loaded up the presentation, so you can download and take notes if you would like to. And it's up on his site, which is www.davidleeking.com. So I will turn it over to him, and thank you all for coming. And if you have any questions, let us know.
Cool. Thanks, everybody, for coming. This is exciting. Webcasts are always fun because I can sit at my desk and go somewhere at the same time in a way. Okay, so I will get started. Let's see, this session is called Communication Between Techies and Non-Techies, and that's what we're going to talk about today. It should be pretty fun. So today I'll touch on a few areas. I'm going to give a definition of the problem as I see it, what my library did to make that problem better, to solve the problem in our case. And then from that I will go to tips and pointers when talking with quote-unquote the other side, and by that I mean techies talking to non-techies, and also non-techies talking to techies as well. And then hopefully we'll have some discussion afterwards, both in Opal and probably in Second Life as well, so that's pretty cool. Okay, so first I have some horror stories to tell you, just so you guys know that I know what I'm talking about when I'm talking about techies and non-techies here. The first two are from the techie side. You'll hear about our ITS visits pretty soon in this presentation. During those visits, I went to a small branch in our library system and was asking them some questions, and found out that even though we'd been planning for a new library catalog system for, like 2 or 3 years, nobody at this branch of the non-professional staff anyway, part-time non-professional staff, knew anything about it. And when I mentioned it, they said, well, why in the world would we do that? This one's working fine. So that's where it scared me, because we've been sending out, 2 years worth of communication on that. They didn't know about it. Another case, in these same ITS visits at another branch, one of our larger branches, a person there told me that he'd been working there for 9 months and still didn't know how to read his email. That does not bode well for a library that focuses on technology a lot. And then on the other side of that, the IT department was changing email software. We were going through a whole big migration process. And even though we'd told this IT staff person to not do something, he went ahead and did it. He changed He flipped over a marketing person's, our graphic designer's, email, and then left on vacation for a week. And of course, this person's email didn't work, and he was without email for a good week. And of course, he had lots of graphic files in there that he needed to send to people, et cetera, et cetera. We eventually did get that person's email back up, but the marketing department didn't trust us for a while after that. And I can see why. So those are the kinds of horror stories I've got a lot more. I'm sure everybody that is listening today probably has some horror stories as well from both sides of the fence. So what is the problem here? Well, us techies are, well, techie. And non-techies don't know squat about XML, SQL, propagating domain names, etc., and never the twain shall meet. Or, a bit more specifically, techies and non-techies have very different perceptions of reality. Their jobs are different. The techie's job is based on technical skill sets. And in fact, they're usually not hired for people skills. And if you think about this, this makes sense. To an extent, if, for example, you're hiring an automation librarian and you have the CIRCE system, you're wanting somebody who is very skilled at the back end of the CIRCE Unicorn OPAC. If they happen to be good communicators, that's great too. That's icing on the cake. However, their primary skill set would be that technical skill set. And this kind of a job tends to attract people that are more interested in technical skills than in people skills. It just comes with the territory. You can think of this sort of like a catalog librarian versus a reference librarian. Very different types of jobs, and they attract very different types of people, generally speaking. And the non-techie, on the other hand, their job is not based on technical skills at all. I mean, they need to know how to operate things, but their job occurs after the hardcore tech part is already in place. So after the computer is set up, after databases are created, after any XML thing is done, the website is built, that's when the non-techie's job takes place. And they're then using the stuff that the techies have built to serve patrons. So that's a big difference. Okay, and then my library, as I get into our ITS visits thing that I told you about, just a little background. At the time we did these ITS visits, we did this a couple years ago. We had a 13-person IT staff, so a pretty large IT department. And it's large because we not only serve a good-sized library system, but we also have at least a 27-member library consortium, and those are multi-branch library members, so it's like 40-some different libraries that we serve as well. And so we serve a lot of people, and in the process of serving those people, we had started hearing bad things about ourselves, about our department, about individuals, about projects, etc. People were grumbling. And rather than just putting up with it or ignoring it, we decided to face it head on and do something about it. So, I did something that I called ITS visits. Basically, I visited each branch and department with pen and paper in hand. I asked them for issues, concerns, and suggestions that the library staff at each branch and each department had about my department and about technology. And then I wrote it all down. And in fact, I made sure not to say much. I let them go on, basically, about what was going on in their area and their perceptions of technology and my department. And in fact, at one point I attempted to say something, and a person in this particular department said, no, this is my time, you be quiet. Which was perfectly fine, because that's what we were doing. We were gathering information. And from that, I being the computer geek that I am, I compiled everything into an Excel spreadsheet and made this big report out per branch and department, what the big issues were, and then summarized that into a big issues for the whole library system, and which I had a good list. And here are some of the things that came up. And these were things that came up more than once. And some of these are sort of scary. So let me go through some of them. We were told that we didn't respond quickly. In some cases, it took us 2 to 4 months to solve problems, which was probably true. In some cases, you know, there were parts we needed to order, or we had budget concerns that we had to wait on. The problem there was that we didn't actually communicate back and say, this is going to take, you know, 2 months to complete because of this. We just sort of ignored it for 2 months until the part came in. But that looked really bad on the other side. Staff accused my department of taking the help desk phone off the hook so we didn't have to answer calls. Ouch. And, you know, at first glance, I would say, well, no, we didn't do that. On second thought, it's actually a possibility we did that. At the time we did this, these ITS visits, we had installed the Pharos computer and print management system, and something wasn't right with it. It was going down a lot, and when, of course, it went down, it took all the computers in the system down with it. And then each branch in each department would call us. We would literally, we have a help desk phone for when technology problems occur, people give us a call. And it would ring, we'd answer, we'd say, you know, it's broken, we'd hang up, ring, just like that for like a half an hour, so much so that if this was happening in the evening or on the weekend, because we had staffed our help desk in the evenings and the weekends, the person that was there staffing the help desk phone couldn't actually get up to walk to the server room to do whatever they needed to do. They had to answer the phone. So it's very possible that we kept the phone off the hook so we could go fix something. Again, we didn't tell anybody what was going on, and it was a bad perception. Some of our ITS staff weren't nice, weren't helpful, had an attitude. Yeah, that was probably correct. Let's see. ITS answers the phone, help desk, and then staff have to ask our names. So we weren't being personal. We were just sort of, we were, you know, in our minds probably just trying to get things done quickly. In the rest of the library's minds, we were being impersonal. Okay, not all ITS staff have equal knowledge. That was true. Like I said, we staffed our help desk on evenings and weekends. So, and with our 13-member IT department, myself and somebody else, we were in charge of the web and pretty much worked on the website only. Somebody else pretty much worked on fixed PCs or fixed software on the PCs only. And so, when, say, I was staffing something Sunday afternoon and something broke on the computer, I would possibly have to say, I can't do anything about it. You'll have to wait till Monday when our PC technicians are in. And vice versa with something that went wrong on the web. So that was, again, perceived as a problem, and it was a reality of our department at the time. Let's see. And that would go along with that bottom one there, staff get conflicting information, because depending on who was staffing the help desk at the time, it's possible somebody got conflicting information. Let's see, somebody said ITS needs customer service skills. I'll cover that one in a second, and again in a second. And the your problem has been resolved. We have help desk software. At the time, the software we were using, we had a canned message go out when problems were fixed that said your problem has been resolved and didn't give any other information. People wanted the other information, and so that was perceived as being unhelpful as well. Okay, so this slide says, ouch, it was painful. My department decided that we needed some help. So what we did, we found the Kansas City area has a lot of different seminar companies, and one we had ties with at the time actually would talk with you, find out what it was you wanted, and make some customized training to fit your needs. So we actually worked with this person and created a customized customer service training for my department, and we improved. It was great training at the time. We really needed it. Some things we did, let's see. Well, first of all, I was told numerous times that me just going around asking what was wrong really helped a lot. That changed perceptions in a positive way. We also reorganized our department. Like I said, everybody served on the help desk. Well, we changed that. We changed it to maybe one or two people answering the phone, and then if they couldn't solve the problem, they would then send it to me if it was a web problem or something like that. And that helped because people had a consistent voice when they reported a problem. And that person had a bigger view of what was going on as well, so that helped my department too. We started watching our attitudes, and we learned about customer service and communication from the training. Their training we had actually involved what to do on the phone and how to answer it and how to spin things in a positive way, that kind of thing. A lot about just basic communication that our techie staff just didn't have, that other people probably do have more naturally. So that helped us a lot. And so we started really communicating a lot better, and that went a long way. So, okay, that's what we did at My Library System. And now from that, and then from some things I found on the web, I've got some tips for talking to and teaching non-techies. So first of all, us techies need to ditch the jargon, no acronyms. And then if you decide to use acronyms, if you need to, or big technical terms, you need to define them first. You can go to, I've got whatis.techtarget.com here listed. They're a place that defines technical terminology. You can also just go to Google and type in define XML or define, you know, whatever it is you want to, and you'll probably get a good definition as well. Also, remember to simplify it when possible. That always helps. Also, remember to talk about the right things in a meeting. When you're in a meeting with non-technical staff, please, please, please do not talk about systems and code. That's going to get you nowhere fast. Instead, talk about what the user will do. So don't describe the process. Instead, go ahead and describe the result that the user will see in a project that you're doing or something that you're building. So always remember to explain from the user's point of view, and that'll go a long way as well. When communicating to non-technical staff, go ahead and use multiple forms of communication. And this presentation is maybe a good example of that. So you're hearing my voice. On my blog, I sent the PowerPoint handouts. So you've got, if you've printed it out, you have a paper handout that you're going along with. Excuse me. You've got the PowerPoint on the web here. So that's three different forms of communication. Okay, I can fudge a little with the props and pictures and stories and use Second Life as an example there. And then paper prototypes, that would be like if you're describing a new web service, you can actually print out each page and, you know, just show, like, if you click here, it goes to flip this next page, that kind of a thing. The point here is that, you know, all of us are different types of learners, and sometimes it helps to have more than one way to communicate something, because if somebody's not getting it from my talk, maybe they will get it from looking at a handout, or maybe they will get it from a prop that you've brought of some type, or a photo, if it's a, I don't know, a standalone self-checkout machine or something like that. Actually seeing the thing will help some people, you know, get it more. So go ahead and use multiple forms of communication. Okay, always remember that organization is the key in any meeting. Whether it's a meeting with 20 people describing something new, or if it's a one-on-one meeting. And then some of these steps that I have on this slide will refer to when you're making a handout for somebody on, you know, steps to take to do something. Remember to organize them into steps and go from one to the next. And believe it or not, for techies, it's really hard to do. Can't take a good raising of hands here, but just think back to tip sheets that you've used before for a techie type thing. How many times has somebody hit something that had, you know, step one, do this, step two, do this, but between those two steps, about 10 functions were left out, or 10 steps were left out? I've had that so many times. It's really hard for a techie person to do that. Because they'll go to step one, and then they'll be like, well, duh, of course everybody knows to do this. But that is not true. You really need to describe every single click, even if it's painfully obvious to techie people. Have to do that. Okay, and also, for a different type of tip sheet when you're in a meeting, describing a new techie service or the new technology push that you're doing. And this relates back to the multiple forms of communication that I mentioned. Make sure to also bring a simple summary of the thing you're trying to describe. You know, like a white paper will have a one-page executive summary. Do that in your meetings when you're describing something new that you're going to roll out. that will go a long way, because it will summarize really briefly, without really touching on the technology itself, but focusing on the end result, what's going on. So, in this summary, it can be one page, that's probably more than enough, but include a glossary with words and descriptions if it's needed. This would be a good time, you know, I said in that no acronyms area, to go ahead and define things that need to be defined. Also, concepts might need to be defined, like if you're rolling out a blog. I know not every librarian in the world knows what that is yet, so that could be a good thing to describe. And just a little simple one sentence, this is what it is, that kind of a thing. And then also links for more information. If the person is interested enough to follow through and find out more about it, you can include some links that will go and describe things in more detail. So that's a good thing one can do in a meeting. Also, the last thing I'm saying for the techies, this would be definitely for us. Eat some humble pie. No eye rolling, no flinching, snickering, etc. when somebody says they don't understand something, even if you have explained it to them three times. Some people just don't get techie stuff as much. And remember that nobody is born knowing this stuff. Remember what it feels like to be clueless. I know, you know, right now I'm in charge of an IT department, and I've been in charge of websites and that kind of thing. So I'm pretty much a techie person. But I had a basic class in high school that was really not terribly useful. That would be in the mid-80s, or early 80s, I guess. And then I really started working on computers in college when I found out I could get extra credit if I typed my paper out on a computer. It was one of those little television screen-like Macintoshes. So my wife, my future wife at the time, helped me with that because I was clueless. And now I'm in charge of an IT department, so I've come a long way since then. But at one time, I was clueless, and I certainly did not know what I was doing. So remember that when you are talking to non-techie staff, that it's not that they're clueless. It's that they've never experienced it before. So you might have to take baby steps there when explaining something. Okay, now we've talked about techies talking to non-techies. There is an other side of that. The non-techies talking to the techies. And really, it's the same stuff that I just talked about. I think most of my previous points apply to both sets of people that we're talking about today. Non-techies out there, do you guys have jargon? OPAC, ILL, reference interview even, those kinds of things. Think about this. My department is made up of people hired for their technology skills, not because they have an MLS degree. I have one. There are a few others in my department that do. I think there are two others in my department that do right now. Everybody else was hired because they know how to do techie stuff. There was just to give you an example of that, one of our previous web developers, he was hired for his techie skills. He had been a school teacher before that. He didn't know anything about libraries. And we were in a meeting talking about, I don't remember what, and he leaned over to me and whispered, "Hey, David, what is an OPAC?" And I had to explain that to him. I was like, "Oh, that's a library catalog." He's like, "Oh, okay, that makes sense." And so I had to explain some of these jargonish terms to him. Had to explain what ILL was, just the whole thing. He thought us librarians were crazy for a while. But he understood. But the point is there that, you know, we have to explain those non-techie yet librarianish terms to the technical staff, especially if they don't have experience in libraries. So go ahead and learn the other side's jargon as well. Even if you're a reference librarian, you can certainly brush up on some of the current technology that's out there. You know, you don't necessarily have to know how to parse a SQL statement or whatever, but it might be good to be familiar with some of the terminology involved, especially when a new project is coming up, so you can speak intelligently about the project. Remember that creative communication is essential on both sides. And it really helps to hold more than one meeting. You can hold the first meeting to go over the project, then step back and give everybody, both the techies and the non-techies, time to think about it, and then come back and really start solving the problem or working on the issue. And go ahead and learn something about each other's job. My department, actually, we each of us sat a day at a branch or a public service desk to learn what was going on in the branch or department. That really opened some of our eyes to be like, oh boy, they're really busy here. They don't have time to do this. They have time to do this, etc. It was really eye-opening. Okay, now I have some what to do when situations, about four slides worth of these. So I'm going to focus on what to do when calling the help desk. For your smaller libraries out there, this would be what to do when calling your one techie person, whether that's a part-timer or a full-timer. What to do when planning a new database or updating the website, etc., sort of focusing on a project. What to do when planning a new building, because we did that a few years ago. And what to do when a problem occurs. Okay, what to do when calling the help desk. And this would be non-techie staff calling the techie staff, or emailing them too. The first most important thing to do is explain the problem completely as you see it. You might not be able to use all the technical jargon that would be involved for the techie to understand it, but just explain it as well as you can. Also, write down everything that happens. Write down error messages completely. That's actually very useful to a techie. And probably the most important thing on this one would be willing to work through the problem when you call. We've actually had examples of that not being the case. Somebody would call and say, this is broken, please fix it. And then we say, well, what was the error message? Oh, I didn't write that down, I didn't have time. Oh, well, let's set through and work through the problem so I can see what's going on. No, I don't have time, just come fix it by a click. When we get that, basically the answer is that if you don't have time to work through the problem, we don't have time to fix the problem. Honestly, that might sound harsh, but at the same time, your techie staff really, they can't fix it if they don't know what needs to be fixed. So when you call or when you email, be willing to work through the problem. Okay, when planning something new, I'm thinking reference department here, just as an example. If you're planning a virtual reference service, hold a meeting just by yourselves before you start talking to the IT staff or the technology staff. And in that meeting, figure out what it is that you want, what kind of end results you're hoping for. And then when you go to the meeting, the real meeting, so to speak, with the techie staff, you can say, this is what we want, this is what we want it to do. So you're focusing on the results that you want rather than on specific technology. And then during that process, you can describe, you know, the new program, the database you're hoping for, the idea you have, etc. But again, you're focusing on the end user results rather than on specific technology. Now, we've had people say, I want something built this way. And they tell us that, and then we realize, you know, there's really a better way to do this. There's a different language to use. There's another computer that would work better for this, etc. So let your techie staff do their techie thing, and then you guys do your thing, and that will work really well. Okay, when planning something new, make sure that everyone understands what functionality is needed, and that's on both sides of the fence. Make sure that the techie staff understands, well, we need these types of searches going on. We need this kind of access or functionality, and get that out all up front. And that's what you guys can do in your pre-meetings, what I was calling the pre-meetings, figure that kind of thing out, rather than having the IT department build this or set up this new service and then going, oh, you know, we really need this also. That's one of those things where techie people say, oh, that's increasing the scope, or that's out of the scope of the project. All that means is you didn't tell me that until I'm halfway through building the new thing. So much better to figure that thing out beforehand. So remember that. Let's see. Also, get some specifics and this is on both sides. When can you start building or implementing the new technology? How long will it take? How much will it cost? Is it actually doable? And then what do we have to do? And that would be a question that both sides need to answer. You know, obviously the techie staff will have to build it or have to implement it. The non-techie staff will have to test it out because they're the ones that will be using it in the long run. So they'll have to plan time for that as well. And then I just put this in there. Remember to plan for the next project meeting because it will take more than one meeting to figure something out. You don't want to have one meeting and then have your techie staff build something and say, okay, it's finished by, and it's not really working right at all. You want to have a number of meetings, and that will guarantee success a lot better than just having one meeting about it. Okay, when planning a new building. We moved into a new building about 2 years ago. So I've just got this little reminder in here. Let the techies do their thing and let the non-techies do their thing. But also communicate during that time. And this would go back to the planning involved that I mentioned before when we're focusing on a specific project. We actually had an example here of that not working well. The techie staff planned all the networking, the infrastructure, the servers, the bandwidth needed, where things should be plugged into, etc. In the meantime, some of our public services staff were planning things out and decided, let's move the service desk to the other side of the room. And then they planned all around that and then came back to us and say, we want this on the other side of the room. And we had to come back and say, well, that's fine. However, there are no network ports there. There are no power outlets there at all. So if you do that, you will have no computers, no phones, no lights, etc. Because we had already planned a lot of that in advance. So when working on a new building, there really is a lot of planning to do, and it's not just techie planning at all. You really have to figure out what's going where, how this is going to work, and really plan it thoroughly, because once you start, it's gone. Okay, and now every once in a while, things don't work out well. On the techie side, on the non-techie side, there's a problem that will occur. So try respect first. Try respecting each other. Remember that you're on a team and that you're really working toward the same goal. And you might actually have to vocalize that, you know, say to the other person, if the discussion gets tense, you know, this is just a job. We are working together to get this thing implemented. Let's try to figure it out rather than pointing fingers. And remember to use good communication skills. When you're in an argument, say about something, or when you're disagreeing about a new technology push, your discussion that's going on, it's not about power, control, or winning. It's about figuring out the problem and getting over it so you can move on to the next thing. And remember to instruct and not punish. And good communication is based on honesty and sincerity, so no venting at each other. You can go vent in your own department, but don't vent in a meeting. And it actually does happen frequently, from what I hear. And also remember that your discussion will not always result in agreement or compliance. You know, for example, if somebody comes up and says, hey, David, we need this new web service. I could say yes. I could say, we don't have the budget for that right now, so you'll have to wait. I could say no, because that doesn't fit into the plan that our administrators have for our website. So, I mean, just because we're all being nice to each other doesn't mean that the problem is going to be solved like you want it to be solved. Okay, and then when all else fails, which will happen sometimes, remember to keep your supervisors in the loop. So if you need a decision to be made, don't go to the person who can't say yes and vent on them because it's not getting done. Instead, go to the person who can say yes and talk to them. Obviously, they're the decision makers. It will do no good to vent on somebody else. sometimes you might need to say, my supervisor can chat with your supervisor. This is sometimes a lot better than going to a different non-decision-making staff person and venting with each other. Just let your supervisors figure it out, or administration. And then every once in a while, you have to remember that this is a job. You need to get over it and move on to the next challenge. Life is too short to just get irritated. Okay, I am pretty much done. Wow, let's see. This screen here, we've got, don't write down the whole URL there, but I've got some articles on my blog that you might be interested in reading that will go over some of the same stuff I've talked about in more detail. But just go to davidleeking.com. It should be the second or third post down. We actually, talking about techie staff here, my blog had a crash the other day and we lost some information, so I had to redo a post. But it's there, so go to my blog and find it. So just go to davidleeking.com. And now I think we can take some questions. So what kinds of questions or comments do you guys have?
Library, I'd say that everything that you went over for a public library, you know, applies to us as well. So it was an excellent summary. Just a couple observations. I noticed in our department there's only three of us in systems, and we've had such a skills drift that there's absolutely no way that the three of us can be interchangeable. You know, what we're doing is just too complicated for everybody to know everything. 10 years ago I could. You know, nowadays I can't. One of the things that I've noticed, though, is that in many cases users can't really identify what a problem is, and there doesn't seem to be any way around that. You know, for example, I'll get a call saying that the catalog is down, and what they actually mean is that the website that they were clicking on to get to the catalog was down, but the catalog was down. So I go through a whole different set of procedures to find out what's wrong with the catalog and find out there's nothing wrong with the catalog. So I'm not really quite sure what the solution is. I mean, there are situations where I think users just won't learn that it's easier to call us for a solution, you know, regardless. So anyway, I'm going to try to work on the communication skills that you mentioned earlier.
Yeah, I think that's actually a good idea in your situation. Since, you know, you guys can't know everything, some of that creative communication will work. And also, sorry for using a goofy word, but proactive communication. If you know something is down, go ahead and, however it works in your organization, to tell people in advance, oh, this thing has crashed, we're working on it. That will go a long way as well. So that's a good idea. Let's see, I've got a couple of typed comments. Any advice for library science students? I would say for library science students, you know, go ahead and whether you're going to be a techie librarian or a non-techie librarian, in library school you guys have the opportunity to learn techie stuff. Go over to your university's library if you can. See if you can intern or hang out with the techie staff there, see what they're doing. Learn about some of the newer Web 2.0 services that are out there, that kind of thing. Focus on the user-oriented technology like instant messaging, blogs, bookmark managers, that kind of thing, and that will go a long way. You'll probably find when you get out of library school that you know more about that kind of stuff than the rest of the library staff will. So that's one idea. Let's see, Shelley asks, what kind of creative communication ideas for non-techies to employ? I would say the stuff I mentioned. If you're in a meeting, go ahead and define the problem in non-techie terms. If you're wanting to push out a new service, explain the goal that you want. You know, I want our customers to be able to do this, this, and this when we're done implementing this new technology. And be real specific about that, and that should help. Let's see. Sarah says, I am curious if you had to cut back on help desk hours, when you went from everyone covering the help desk to only a few people? No, we didn't cut back. Again, we have a pretty good-sized library staff. So what we did there, we ended up having one person doing the 9-to-5 shift, so to speak, on the help desk. And then the evenings and weekends, we relied for a long time on just one extra person who wanted his hours to work afternoon to evening and then on weekends. And so that person would then take over the help desk on the evenings and weekends. So they had really like two or three people total answering the help desk. So we still had everything covered pretty well. Let's see, any other questions?
David, one other question slash observation. Do you think it's within the scope of the techie side of things to try to encourage users to explore other avenues for information, which is kind of vague sounding, I know, but what I mean is our vendor, Circe, has a pretty explicit setup for each functional area. And many things that come to me are not so much problems as they are the way they're doing it. And I try to encourage people to say, okay, well, go check with your peers, see what they're doing over at such and such a place. You know, they're similar to us. But I've seen a real reluctance for people to participate in that, whereas the system admin side of it, you know, we're constantly emailing each other on the listservs.
Good point. That's a hard one. That really is. I had a similar question, and I think it was the last Internet Librarian Conference. Maybe it was the one before. Somebody, I was talking about techie staff, and somebody stood up in the question and answer time and said, I'm a public services staff person. I don't like using technology. I don't want to learn new things. How will this help me? And my first thought was, well, why did you come to the Internet Librarian Conference then? My second thought was, you probably need to work in another field. Unfortunately, I didn't really say that to the person. I said it in a much nicer way. But I think, you know, it's a library. Everybody, yeah, Erica says it was Internet Librarian 2005. It was a crazy comment. I agree, Erica. Okay, we're all in libraries, and libraries are all about learning. It's a lifelong learning experience. It's more than just a job. That's how I look at it anyway. And there are absolutely too many techie things for me to learn, but I want to try because I think it's fun. And that's probably why I'm attracted to the techie jobs. Non-techies, however, they get fun out of serving customers. I mean, I was a reference librarian for a while, and that's great fun. And there are new ways to serve your customers now. There are ways that you can reach out that we just couldn't before, even 5 years ago. So I would think that those kinds of things are things that the public services types of staff should want to learn, and many do. I mean, honestly, they really do, but there are some that don't. And those kinds of people, it's a hard one to answer without being harsh and saying, well, you know, your job description says you need to learn this stuff, so if you're not doing your job well. But honestly, that's sometimes what it takes to implement change. I guess I could say that implementing change like that needs to come from the top. So if your library director is interested in doing those kinds of things, that person should be the one to implement it. And it needs to come from the top down. And then I think if it works that way, there will be grumbling, of course, but at the same time, maybe that will help some more. Oh, Lori asked me what my Second Life character's name was. It's Dawid Quattro. Here, I'll type it out. And I'll probably, oh, I can't type it out right now. Oh, there we go. And I'll be going to Second Life after I'm done here, just to play. Okay, let's see. Karen asks, do you have a help desk presence on your website that can be a first line for how users proceed with problems? We have experimented with that. In some library systems, I would say that would work really well. you could set up some type of an intranet or wiki that says, you know, just it's just a list of common problems, like a FAQ, like an FAQ type thing, that says, what do you do if? And then go from there. It hasn't worked so well in our organization, mainly because a lot of our evening part-time staff right now, when they're scheduled to work, they're working the desk and don't have as much time to go check other things like that, and they're extremely busy. We're working on how to change that kind of thing now. But in some organizations, that would work really well, I think. Let's see. Erica asks, do you have any experience developing a type of staff playground for learning about new tech and tools? Again, not so much yet. Other libraries, however, do that really well. Michael Stevens' old library, St. Joseph County Public Library, their web person there, has built a staff playground that she was using just for her own self and whoever else was interested, and it's turned into an actual playground for staff to go in and load things and play with things and see if it works and break things. It's on a safe server that can break and won't break the rest of the library. And that's a very good way to go about it. If you are implementing lots of new things, set up a demo, let staff play with it, let staff break it. If you're working on setting up, I don't know, instant messaging, go ahead and do it and play with it. There's nothing wrong with that at all. That's a very good way to let people get their feet wet without actually messing things up. So that's a good idea. Okay, Shelley asks, do you have suggestions for increasing collaboration between techies and non-techies when creating new services? Now, we've had, at my library system, we've had a lot of that, but some of it work and some of it not work. I would say when you're working on a new service and you start having meetings about it, you need to include both types of staff in the meetings. And what I'm meaning here is like set up a task force that will focus on the project or the service and make sure you have, you know, lots of public service staff if it's going to be something that affects the public, or something that's rolled out to the public, but also have at least one techie person in there that's going to be working on the project, and vice versa. If it's a more techie type thing that's going to affect staff, have your techie people there, but also have the non-techie people that is going to affect, you know, in the makeup of your task force, and then get the task force to agree on things as they move forward, just like task forces are supposed to work. That will help a lot. And then even go one further with that when you're training. Well, you know what? Once the task force has created this thing and it's rolled out, have your non-techie staff do the training if it's possible and if it's feasible, if it makes sense. We've done that before. We've had our public service people that work at the CERC desk and branches do training for us sometimes. And that works really well, because they sometimes don't trust the IT staff as well, and sometimes we gloss over things, but the people that have worked the desk before understand that kind of thing better, and so they can explain it in a way that needs to be explained. And in fact, some of our IT staff have come from branch public service areas, so we tend to grab the good people we find at the branches. So when we go out and do training, We'll have those people do the training, and they understand how it works on both sides of the fence. Okay, other questions? No, it's not a formal program of use of non-techies. We just do that. But I think you could make it formal, too. You know, whatever works in your organization, I would say.
David, I think one of the things that you spoke about earlier, which I think is really important, is that mutual respect issue that I just can't go over that enough. And I think that's something that anything we can do, and even if it's like taking people to lunch, and this is something I'm really bad about doing because like I would rather just like work all day long. But in terms of like just taking people out who you don't normally go to lunch with, whether that's techie staff, if you're a non-techie or vice versa, I think that just goes a long way when you get to talk to people otherwise.
Yeah, I would agree. And it's so funny to have to say that in a presentation, you know, respect each other. It sounds really weird, like, well, no, duh, of course we would. But so many times when it comes down to the actual meeting, that can disappear fast. So a reminder is very good. And if you're, you know, if you're working and you feel like you're on the same team, that goes a long way. So I agree. And it can't be repeated enough. Janet says, when people are reporting things, teaching your staff to do screenshots is excellent. That's an excellent idea, because that way, so you know, sometimes those error messages can be pretty long. It's like a paragraph of geeky text. So screenshots work really well for that. Ooh, Janet, that's a good one. Do you have any advice on keeping tech-related discussions focused on the task or problem at hand, rather than turning into a forum for everyone to vent their frustrations with technology? You know, that's a hard one. And, you know, librarians as a whole, they're passive-aggressive people, except if you get them in a room with, when you're talking about technology, and they suddenly will vent their frustrations. And on the other hand of that, we're trained to do public service work. We're trained to do techie work. We're not trained to, to be facilitators of a discussion. But in those situations, you know, somebody's in charge of the meeting, or should be. That person has to really take charge of the meeting. It's simple to say, it's hard to do, but you really have to say, I hear your frustration. We're not talking about that. Let's focus back on this, at the problem at hand. And you just have to be a little hardline on that. And of course, a polite way. And that will go a long way. That will quiet the person down, hopefully. If not, you might have to talk to them later. And actually, you know, if it's a big problem with one person, that's where your supervisor talks to their supervisor, and vice versa. Otherwise, the person who's in charge of the meeting just needs to step up to the plate and do the facilitating in a way that focuses on the problem at hand, and then mentions an outlet for those venting types of things. We often say, yeah, I understand that that's a problem, but we have something in place. Send that problem to the help desk and we'll fix it for you. Done. Let's move on to talk about the problem. And that's what we do. Okay, so Erica, I guess I'll turn this back over to you.
Okay, that's great. Thank you so much, David. This has been a really great presentation. And I think at one time we had like close to 55 people in here, and then 12 people, like Lori said, in the Second Life. So this is really incredible. Does anyone else have any other questions before we sign out? Excellent. Well, I will let the kudos roll in the text chat. And to let everybody know, this will be available in the Opal archives. And I believe it will be on the podcast too. I'll let Tom let us know if that's not the case. And again, we want to have these, you know, monthly programs, it's the third Friday at 10 o'clock Central Time. And they're really a wide variety. So hopefully you can get sort of those non-techie librarians who are on your staff to get into Opal and start thinking about all the cool ways they could use Opal to deliver services to patrons and programs to patrons. So thank you so much, David, for kicking off the series. And I appreciate everybody showing up today. Thanks so much, and have an awesome weekend.